We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. I just want to start by saying happy Friday.
Yeah.
And some of you actually might be listening to this while you're traveling to Park City to hang out with us, which is a weird sentence.
That's crazy.
But I listen to podcasts when I fly. That's one of the main places I listen to them.
Yeah, road
so
trips, flying,
you might be like traveling, and that'll be weird. You may have just like stepped off a plane. You're listening to the podcast, and you're about to hang out with Paul and I, which is weird.
People have said, "I hear your voices when they meet us live," and then I've just been listening to you,
it's weird
hearing you say different things, and you're in front of me.
It doesn't matter if you're coming or not. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you to those of you that have rated it and shared it. All of that stuff keeps us in the top 10. This podcast continues to grow at a level that kind of shocks us. So thank you guys
for all the listening. Well, the Paris Motor Show is going on currently as of this podcast. Mm-hmm. The press days have just gone by, and we are looking at a few of the cars. I'm sure you're consuming things in the news. Mm-hmm. I just want to touch on one of the biggest reveals, and that is the new 3 Series G20. They've gone up, of course. They keep going to the next letter of the alphabet.
Of course they do. The size of the old 5.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to dissect this car a little bit because there's been a lot of people asking us about this car. I think of everything at the Paris Motor Show that has been, I will say, fairly well attended by car manufacturers, but there have been a lot that haven't attended. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then some have come back. But there have been a few car manufacturers that didn't attend, so BMW took the opportunity to make this as the 3 Series reveal. This is the all-new car, the new G20 chassis. And it's my understanding right off the bat that there is no manual transmission option for North America.
That's what they're saying.
This is this is a shift in headspace.
Yeah, it is. Nice pun there, by the way.
Yeah,
it's a shift in headspace.
Yeah.
But, and they're also offering an 8-speed auto. So it doesn't sound like it's a dual clutch. It sounds like it's an 8-speed auto.
Yes, yes. They've got, 6 different engines available from the launch, starting with a 320i with a turbo 4-cylinder, 184 horsepower, and that goes up to 382 horsepower. And, that's a powerful engine. That's good.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that kind of power. But then no manual transmission. And the reason I say this, and I think everybody has noted this, is because we default to BMW so often as, one of the remaining car manufacturers that we could select a car for you listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want a manual transmission something. And we come back to sports sedans or just sports cars in general, and we think, not too many manufacturers doing this. Now, they have said nothing from the M division. This has just been, new 3 Series going on up to the M Sport Edition. So the M Performance, essentially. So it's the M340i.
Like the new M3 will still offer a manual. That's an interesting question.
I'm hoping the M Performance, the M Division will say,
continues
on. But is this the end? I speculate. I hope not. I hope BMW still brings the enthusiasm. And I've also been kind of ragging on the interiors for a while of nothing new here, nothing new to see, and it's kind of looking old. But I will say European manufacturers don't move as fast as other manufacturers because they have a clientele base. They have relatable, hey, I'm familiar, I like that, I don't want big changes. So they move, I think, more slowly.
Glacially?
I suppose. So I'm looking at this car, and I'm liking what the front is doing. I'm looking at the rear, and from the sketches, I really did like what I see. Mm. And there have been some accusations of the overall styling taking on some cues of what you'd see from Asian car manufacturers.
I agree with that.
Which I can see. However, those rear lights, initially, just first glance, they look, even though they're not, they look a little bit more rectilinear in proportion and shape.
Nobody listening saw my eyebrows shoot up at that word. What was that word?
Rectangular?
Rectilinear
forms.
Wow. I'm hanging on.
Before you criticize this car, I ask that you take a real discerning look and look over all the lines and what they're doing in photos. Don't just look at the overall shape and proportion and just the headlights and the taillights. Look at the character lines. Look at the swept up just above the rocker, how it continues into the panel gap, going right up into the taillight there. Look at what that rear three-quarter body side is delineating. I'm fascinated by some of these new shapes, and it's a fine line to incorporate everything that a BMW is, keep the prior owners happy, make it not look too crazy and different like a spaceship landed and what the heck is this thing,
yeah,
and still push forward with a new clean design, I'm coming to you and I'm submitting my like. I like this
car. Do
you
really?
A lot.
I want to see it in the sheet metal.
I agree.
I think it's super busy and I don't like it.
There's a lot
going
on. But
I'm not the design guy.
There's a lot going on. But look at those rear taillights again, and you think, oh, they're just, you know, slender, you know, rectangles, you know, whatever that is. There's a history in BMW 5 Series and 3 Series. Look at those taillights from the old, older cars.
Definitely.
And you'll see a lot
that
of
history for sure.
Clean, straight lines, and they're pulling that out of here. And then look at that rear taillight. It's actually, there's fine, fussy details in there, which get a little bit too much for my eye. But the more I look at this car and I appreciate details, the more I'm intrigued by some of these choices. And they've now made the design language that they've been honing in on. I think they're starting to really make it work from a, here's where we're going for the future, everyone.
Interesting. I'm not liking anything I see here.
Okay.
I'm not the design guy. I just don't
fair,
like it, though.
Fair. And it's very subjective. And
there's so many creases. I mean, the hood is just, it's
there's a lot.
Overwhelmed with creases.
I agree.
And
I agree.
The up curve there on the rocker, I totally see what you're saying. I see where it connects to a seam, but I think when it's driving down the road, it looks like a curve to nowhere.
I suppose, sure, I can see that. The Simpsons escalator to nowhere.
There you go. Yeah.
Falling off the edge.
They have a matching shape, front and rear three quarters. It's an intake shape that becomes either a fog light or the tail light, like extra little parking lamp. But it's just a weird shape.
It is, but from a consistency of theme standpoint,
yeah.
Look at the interior. I'll say the dihedral looking trapezoidal shapes that they are refusing to give up.
Yeah, they are. They're hanging on.
Look at that rear three quarter of the car, and you're starting to see some consistency there. But they're pulling things together better.
But I submit to BMW, if you picked a poor shape, don't do it more. Just move on to a different shape.
Fair.
A different shape. Circles a shape. Circles look nice. What is this weird? Anyway, go on.
Why does the new 3 Series look like the old Taurus from the 90s?
Hey.
No, I'm not saying that. But inspect this car before you jump to any conclusions. Again, we've got to see this in person.
I want to see it in person.
But inspect the photos and inspect all these lines more carefully. Look at the detail shots rather than the overall shots of the car. And then come to me with your opinion. And if you don't like it, that's perfectly fine. I'm not saying you have to agree with me. I'm not saying that. But I am appreciating this detail more than I appreciated the F80.
Okay.
I like this car better than the prior generation.
I respect that comment from you. I have no basis for the fact that I just go, ew. But we'll see.
Again, anything new and different and, whoa,
true,
what's that?
True,
it
true.
Takes time to warm up.
It
so
does. It
give
does.
Yourselves time. See it in the flesh, you know, in the sheet metal.
And I agree with you. I've never loved the F80. I mean, some of the, like, the M3, M4 variants of it, they started to make it work a little bit, but I never thought it was a beautiful car.
I mean, I can't say this is beautiful, but I'm liking what they're doing. I'm liking where it has potential because they've still got some blistered fenders here. They've got some nice, crisp highlight forms. There's stuff to like.
Let's hope the M guys make it work, and let's hope they
we're
put
just waiting for
it.
The M people
let's hope they do.
Make it work better. Then see, I back away, and then I do like this more. There's some purpose, and those front wheels are way out there in front.
I do like that
language.
Yeah.
Do like that a lot.
Short overhangs is always cool. I agree with that. So there's Paris Motor Show. I mean, there's so much other stuff going on there, but
that is
the big news for sure. We should do car debates. We have two coming up. We have Edward writing in from Cape Cod. We also have John writing in from Austin, Texas. We're going to cover both of those. Also, we keep saying every time, thank you guys. You've buried us in questions. There's some really cool ones I want to cover there, but we should just start with Edward.
Edward, thanks for writing to us. He has a dilemma here at 37 years old, two kids, 4 and 2, from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. He drives a lot for work, and you know, when you wrote to us as a wine and liquor salesman, you know the inevitable bootlegging cars would be, we would tease you about that. So you know that's coming.
He's got something with a V8.
Exactly. You know that's where it started, right? Anyway, 2013 Ford Fusion Hybrid, 140,000 miles. That's what he's got now.
That's the current, yeah.
He is driving a lot for work. Gets around 41 miles to the gallon. He said, well, while it's not a fun car to drive, I like the way it looks, and it does the trick of keeping the gas costs down. Fair enough. He's driving this car for 5 years, and now he's got the itch. I want something new, but
agreed.
He says, should I just grind this thing into the earth,
yeah.
drive it till the wheels fall off, or what do I do?
Yeah.
So we'll see. Now he's saying, he's given us criteria of $35,000. And mm-hmm. remember, the car that he's in, the Ford Fusion Hybrid, keep
yeah.
that in mind
yeah.
as we're choosing things.
Mm-hmm.
And the criteria that he's saying here is nothing in the, I've got to have a fun, hot track car, and this has got to be an amazing
True.
Car.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
has got to be a really great place to be for commuting. So
for
keep
a
that
lot
in
of
mind
time, a lot of miles,
choices.
And let's get as much out of our gas mileage as we can, for sure.
And he does put that down. He says, I like electric. He's only driven a Tesla Model S so far, so that's his baseline for thinking electric.
Sure. Sure.
Which might work,
mm-hmm.
maybe.
Well, 35 grand. I mean, I don't know that they've quite dropped to there yet, but they're
I don't
getting
think so either.
Close. I don't think quite yet.
But I also think close. He's using that as a, hey, what
this
about electric?
Yeah.
I've driven something
yeah,
with
totally.
An electric motor
mm-hmm.
only. Mm-hmm. He says no compacts. He needs room for two car seats and good trunk space. His wife currently has a BMW X5, which is their main family car.
So that's right? covered for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And because, like we've touched on, he lives in his car during the day.
Mm-hmm.
He's everywhere.
Yeah.
Calling
yeah.
on people, I'm sure. He needs nice seats and a nice interior.
Mm-hmm.
Just needs it to be comfortable. So he's got this mix of highway and back roads. So I'm sure you're going all over creation, going
Sounds
everywhere
like it, yeah.
to all kinds
yeah,
yeah. of customers. He says all-wheel drive would be nice, not really necessary,
yeah.
and preferably an automatic just because of the nature of his work,
totally.
Just the nature of
yeah.
the commuting.
Yeah, completely.
All right. So also, Massachusetts apparently has a green car incentive, discounting
mm-hmm.
plug-ins and electric vehicles even more than the federal government, apparently.
Yeah.
And he was thinking along the lines of a Chevy Volt Premier for under $21,000 after the rebates.
That's an excellent buy on that car.
Screaming deal.
It's a really good buy on that car, genuinely.
And I agree with that car. If the
mm-hmm.
miles per gallon is really the push here,
yeah.
then it's hard to go wrong because it does both. I mean, I see you maybe using some of the electric motors or the electric capability.
Sure, I think so.
But mostly, when you're just cruising along, you need gas stations.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
what
yeah.
you're doing.
Well,
he's
never going to find himself stuck. I mean, that's the question mark of the electric reality here,
mm-hmm,
is
mm-hmm.
would you find yourself stuck? Are you going to do enough miles? Are you going to have to calculate at any point? You don't. The Volt, hopefully you'll get benefit out of the electric. Because it was actually, I had it on my list as a really good choice because of that deal.
Mm-hmm,
21
sure.
grand for one of those, that's a steal of a deal. And yeah, you can use it like a normal car, but then you have the benefit of the electric when you have the ability to do it.
So again, the choices here are not the hottest thing ever. I need the Ford Focus
mm-hmm.
RS hatchback.
No.
Craziness,
no. Yeah.
you know, that kind of thing. We've got to think, you know, easy on the backside for long distance
totally.
Driving. Just
totally.
Lots
Good
and
to
lots
be.
Of miles.
Works. Yep.
And the reliability definitely comes into play here. The
mm-hmm.
I don't have time to worry about my car and maintaining it and wrenching
yeah,
and tweaking
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff with something more exotic. So I've been actually wrestling with a few ideas here, and I came upon a car that we have not driven yet. It's actually
okay.
just coming into showrooms, so it's
okay.
very brand new
good.
As of
good,
October
good.
2018 here. I've had some of the usual suspects on my list, but I'm not in love with these ideas. I do like your Volt. Eddie.
I think so, too. That's,
I do like the Volt idea.
You've centered in on kind of being the perfect person for a Volt. I can really see that would work for you. I have two other sedans and a wild card.
It's just the Volt is not the nicest place. It's not
no,
the...
No,
I
no,
can't
it's not.
Wait to come back and
no.
relax. It's not that car.
It's going to do everything you need. I also don't think it's going to excite you a lot, which is a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
It's cool. Don't get me wrong. I'm actually a big fan of the Volt, but... It's not a sexy, compelling, you're not going to tell anybody I drive a Volt and they're like, whoa. And I can see in the parking lot
yeah.
and be like, what's that car? That's not going to happen.
right.
But it's going to run and be
Sweet
great.
Sweet ride, dude.
Yeah. So I have two, I think, pretty interesting full-size
do
sedans
okay.
and kind of an odd wild card. I want to explain my wild card because at first you're going to go, why would I do that? And then I think I can explain it to you.
I'm landing on this car and Eddie, I had an Audi S4.
Okay.
On my list. Like I said, I'm not in love with these ideas quite yet. I'm still warming to my own ideas, I guess.
Okay.
36,000 miles for about $35,000 for 2015 Audi S4.
Okay.
As you said, nice interior, nice place to be.
Yeah.
The mileage probably is not there where you're currently
yeah.
getting. I found Audi A7. Of course, Kia Stinger crossed my mind.
Yeah. Cool, but I don't know about the mileage on that. Yeah,
I'm not sure. But then I did come across this car. It's a 2019 Acura. ILX IS. Now, there's currently an A-spec version of this car.
Okay.
But they are bringing out the ILX IS, which I'm looking at this car more and more in a hot color here. It's red on the website here. I'm digging it. I'm kind of liking it. Okay. And
yeah,
there's been announcements in the press about the ILX, the base model, actually starting at a lower price, which means by the time you work your way up to this, well, I think it's above the A-spec. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
Okay.
I believe this IS will be sort of one level up. But I'm looking at the interior. It's a comfortable place to be, but I come to this because of a balance of many things.
Okay.
Price.
Yeah.
Great looking interior. It is
Agreed.
A luxury brand.
Agreed. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then I think, all right, well, it's got to just run, be reliable, get decent mileage. Maybe you might be able to squeeze high 30s out of it, mm-hmm. but not sure. You might not reach the 41 that you're used to, Eddie.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at this car thinking, I want you to look forward to getting back in your car.
Hopefully. That's what we're hoping for.
I don't want you to arrive at your destination, do business, have your customer meetings, and then realize, oh, I got to get back in my car
and
drive 3 hours back the other direction.
Oh,
man. Okay.
That's the worst. That really is the worst. Yeah.
I don't want that feeling to come across. I want you to think, I can't wait to just get back in and enjoy this again. There's many German cars we could suggest. I think they crossed my mind, and then I thought, well, Kia Stinger, like I said. But I'm coming to this Acura thinking, what about it?
Now, is this...
I'm wondering.
They used to do this on the... This is essentially the Honda Civic rebadge as an Acura, right? But done up nice.
Kind of. I mean, think of, you know, luxury brand here. And
yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
Not to my knowledge is it all-wheel drive.
I don't know that
they're going to be bringing all-wheel drive. But pretty good turbocharged engine. It's a nice size. It's not too big.
True.
I think it'll still have some good agility, especially the A-spec or higher, this ILS or this IS edition here.
Sure.
I mean, they're saying the A-spec edition here has the NSX-inspired Ultra Suede. Okay.
That's an interior material.
Great.
That's nothing to do with handling.
You know, no,
awesome.
It doesn't.
You went into the trim department and went, we could put that on the little
car. No. But, you know, they're thinking about, you know, pushing on this car in every category as far as, you know, a little bit more power, a little bit more, you know, let's...
Sure.
Let's push that direction. I think this is kind of the beginning for them to push in the... What if? Because, again, I come back to price. Because we could go to Lexus and Infiniti and BMW and all those are out of your price range. If you're thinking 35 and you want something near-ish, luxury-ish.
Near luxury. There you
and
go.
And not
like it.
Too... Because I'd love to get you into a new car. Mm-hmm. I really would.
Yeah, I can see it.
And it comes with an 8-speed dual-clutch transmission. So there's some bones here.
All right.
There's some spicy bones down in there. Like
spicy bones.
Waiting to be
that's the name of a
revealed.
Barbecue restaurant that has not yet been opened. Spicy bones.
Spicy bones.
That's perfect.
Where's the meat? We want the meat. Where's that? Anyway, so I'm looking at this car. Again, Eddie, not fully convinced of my choice here because we don't quite know all the specs on it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm intrigued by it, and I think it's a different direction for you.
Yeah.
And again, price, it's a Honda. It's going to be reliable, but it's got... It's that next step up in luxury, and it's just going to be a great place to be. I look forward to this. And it's not as expensive as a Mercedes or a Lexus or something like that.
Totally, yeah.
This is where my headspace is at right now, but I'm still working things out.
I went with two Japanese cars.
Okay.
And then I have a wild card that's a German car. But we'll get there.
Interesting.
So the Japanese cars, the first one I thought of, it's not quite as good for you as far as sheer gas mileage, Eddie, but I think you'd just like this car. And I think it is a car that people are going to be like, that's a cool car, man. Mazda 6 sedan.
Yeah, I could see it. Mazda 6s are great.
Mazda 6s are they're a nice place to be. They've got great styling. They've got an enormous trunk, good full-size back seats. Now, the miles per gallon on that is going to be low to mid-30s on the highway. So you've come down 6 or 8 MPG from what you're used to, but you get a lot of car for your money. They actually handle pretty well. They're just nice places to be. I think you'd drive a Mazda 6 and be like, that's my car.
They've got the new 2019 car here, and they've got the turbocharged engine.
True. I don't know.
It's kind of interesting.
I love it. The problem with the turbocharged engine is, what's your actual gas mileage going to be? Because this is the bait and switch that's going on industry-wide right now. you got turbocharged, you got better miles per gallon. No, it's just faster. And then when we run it without it being on turbo, the miles per gallon are good, but nobody's driving it that way.
Sure.
Okay.
The
EcoBoost Ford F-150s, guess what? They're using just as much mileage as the old V8s because you need that power, you know. But look, I would certainly go turbo. You and I normally talking, turbo is the only part of the discussion. But for this discussion of miles per gallon, maybe you don't want the turbo. I'm asking, if you can get the turbo and like it, please get the turbo. Why not? But I think you can get a lot of car for your money in the Mazda 6.
Claiming 31 on the highway, which is...
Yeah, if you're going if you're going at sea level and you're really not getting the RPM over about 2,000,
right.
you can probably get 31. Right. But the normal one's supposed to get up to 35, so that's a candidate. Also, Honda Accord Hybrid does low 40s miles per gallon.
Except every time I think of Honda Accords now, I hear the Lone Ranger music playing in my head.
I know you're not
I
a fan.
I see it drive by.
I know you're
think,
not a fan of the style.
Tonto, what is that car?
Just don't get it in white. That's the key thing. That's what makes it the worst. Man. Don't get it in white. Then it doesn't look like it's wearing its bandana on the front.
But, the Accord. Put on the bandana for the day. I'm going out hunting.
Woo, yay.
Or
the
whatever
yeah,
it does.
Anyway. Saddle up. We're taking the Accord.
Oh,
anyway,
no.
So
going to Spicy Bones is where we're going.
Perfect. See, it all comes back around to this podcast. You listen long enough, we'll drive you insane too. The Honda Accord Hybrid. Look, low 40 miles per gallon. It's a hybrid, not an electric. So it's a car even more so than the Volt. You just get in and drive it.
True.
But
true.
Yet they're very nice places to be. They run. It's a lot for your money.
What is the MPG on that car?
It is. Know? It's low 40s.
They're claiming low 40s?
Yes, they're claiming low 40s on the hybrid.
And again, if that's driving, if that is the main choice here,
yeah,
then I can see that.
Yeah, so I think you'd get, like the Mazda 6, I think you get a lot for your money, but then you add in the miles per gallon you want. Mm-hmm. Are either the Mazda 6 or the Accord Hybrid going to be the most fun things to drive ever? No, I think they're both going to be more fun than your Fusion. I fully expect the Mazda 6 will be. The Accord might be a wash, but the Accord's going to be a big upgrade in tech and interior and all of these kind of things that I think you'd really be surprised.
Sure, sure. I could see that. I could see that.
Now, German wild card.
Uh-oh.
Here's the thing I think is interesting. You remember that whole Dieselgate thing, that whole Volkswagen thing nobody really wants to talk about? There are TDIs out there.
You're seriously suggesting a diesel?
I'm suggesting a TDI. Because here's the thing about them.
Really?
Here's the thing about them. Everyone I knew that had one, prior to realizing they'd been lied to, everyone I knew that had one couldn't stop talking about how much they liked it, couldn't stop talking about the great gas mileage, and it just ran for them.
Well, that's just it. Were they in love with the fact they thought they were getting that mileage?
No,
I guess they
no,
are.
No, the mileage
it
isn't
was
the
just,
problem.
It was
they
just
got
the,
great
the,
mileage.
The dirty
they were
air.
Just polluting in the process. They're just driving a diesel, but they'd been lied to that it wasn't actually polluting. There were a lot of people that cashed those cars in because they were just angry about the fact that I thought I was doing, remember the terms clean diesel at the time we all accepted, and now we go, those words don't go together.
It really is like jumbo shrimp.
But there were a lot of people that actually were angry just about the fact that they thought they were doing their part and they weren't. Okay. Mm-hmm. But my question is if what this really is about is a nice place to be and gas mileage, TDI, I'm in wild card territory, but TDI, you could find somebody selling one and just get it and accept the fact that, okay, I'm driving a diesel truck, but look at my gas mileage and it's a nice place to be.
I hear you. That's interesting, and I think you're approaching it purely from mileage. What
Absolutely.
What car are you suggesting a TDI
I'm
engine
not.
Dropped in?
It doesn't matter.
Anything
you could do
with
the
that
Golf,
engine?
You could do the Jetta. I mean, what's the car that is interesting to you? But,
sure.
But because here's the thing. Those will be nice interiors. And like the Golf, even in base form, is a surprisingly chuckable car. So a Golf TDI... It's going to feel decent on a back road, but it's also a car you could just commute in and get halfway decent mileage. You and the trucker next to you are doing the same thing, but, you know, even though you're both polluting, you know, like 18-wheelers, in spite of that, you're in a decent place. And so I'm just wondering if that part doesn't bother you, you haven't been sold, you're going to go in, unlike every other TDI owner, you're going to go in with your eyes open and just realize, I'm driving a diesel.
Yeah.
But then you get the gas mileage benefit out of it, and it's a nice place to be.
I mean, I keep reading things about car manufacturers making the decision to, we're not going to offer diesel in North America anymore.
It's not going to happen anymore, yeah.
I mean, here's Kia dropping the Sorento diesel in America.
Yeah, well, they're gone. They're gone.
You know, I just keep seeing that. So, yeah, the infrastructure is still there, of
It'll
course.
Exist. Exactly. But that's why I'm in wild card territory, because I know it's an oddball choice. And there are certainly those of you listening to the podcast that think all TDIs must be cubed. I get it. But they are out there. And the people that I know that have them, they all liked them.
Porsche's website even says the Dieselgate, you know, the warranty or the, you know, what to do. Here, click here. And
of course, yeah.
They're even acknowledging this. So,
yeah.
Wow. Interesting. The appetite for diesels...
Oh, it's gone.
In America,
it's
has
gone.
Just dropped off a cliff. Mm-hmm. But I do like that you're making a case for, hey, I could scoop one of these up cheap.
Exactly.
Just drive it.
Exactly.
And pollute your way merrily along to...
Why not?
To whatever barbecue restaurant you want to go to.
And look, let's also be honest, okay? we're not claiming that any of the rest of these cars aren't polluting. I'm not saying this is a weird standout. It's right. just we had all of us, kind of countrywide, worldwide, had the wool pulled over our eyes that it was somehow a just rebel with me about how funny these words are together now. Clean diesel. And it's not. It was just a diesel. So go drive your diesel and be happy. That's boy, all
those,
I'm saying.
Boy, those marketers had a great time with clean diesel. They had a, it was a gravy train for a while.
It was. Yeah.
Man. Well, thank you for writing into us. If you've got your own car debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or on the website everydaydriver.com, you can write to us. Please write to us your story. We'd love hearing
for sure,
about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, give us some requirements mm-hmm. and you know what you do and you know, what you're going to be using the car for. So I like that we're mixing things up. It's not always about the track car and the hot yeah. hatch this. And, hey, you just want nice
car. We do
car.
Like that, but we got to go places.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. If you love basketball, you are absolutely going to love the official Lakers podcast on Podcast One Sportsnet.
Join Emmy Award-winning sports reporter Susie Schuster and her co-host Aaron Larsoul as they discuss Laker news of the day and break down the upcoming season with some of the biggest guests around.
The guests include recent interviews with Shaquille O'Neal, Magic Johnson, and LeBron James.
So check out the official Lakers podcast every week on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And hey, while you're there, rate that show and rate this one. It's about cars.
Hey, we've got to talk about AmSoil. You know why we like AmSoil? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports and cars, and they get it.
AmSoil has created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It's insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine.
You can get your copy for free at amsoil.com/driver.
Plus, you can learn how the AmSoil Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than is required by the industry standard.
So don't forget, go to amsoil.com/driver to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower.
Let me tell you about Pete, who loved hockey and always wanted to play in the NHL. Pete played since he was 3 and begged his mom to let him stay on the ice. Why, some nights he even slept in his hockey skates. Pete practiced and practiced until one day, when he was 47, Pete realized he just wasn't that good. So he threw his skates in the trash. But then he heard how GEICO, proud partner of the NHL, could save him money on car insurance. So he switched and saved a bunch. So it all worked out.
Okay, in the next 30 seconds, I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but stick with me. I'm not good with numbers. We're going to be in this together, I promise. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance.
This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7.
The company, of course, is GEICO. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers, and I'm out.
John in Austin, Texas writes to us after watching our first videos way back in 2007, which yeah. I can't believe. You
it's
might remember we raced
sentence.
Moving trucks
we
as
did.
One of our bright
Very
ideas.
Very early on, we did have a moving truck race.
It was Penske versus U-Haul.
All of you patrons have seen that. It is quite absurd, yes.
Yeah, that was some fond memories there. We didn't have anything in the back. It was just, you know, we should have
but
launched
we,
those
but
things.
But we drag raced moving trucks.
Yeah,
I mean,
we did.
Come on.
Yeah, we did. All right, so he's looking for guidance. And he writes to us with kind of a two-part question. Okay. And the first yeah. one is, what do you get next after you've had your dream car? After mm-hmm. you've owned it, mm-hmm. what is next?
Yeah.
And you could probably see where this is going because he has owned his dream car and it was taken from him in an accident.
Yep.
And he's asking us to debate what is next. So it's mm-hmm. it's the what do I do next and then what car should I get? What do we as enthusiasts do next after you've had your dream car?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Where do you go from here?
And he did actually, we've talked about it before. We talk about when a car is taken from you, John. We talk about the fact that that is one of the times that we say you have a free pass to go get exactly that car again. And John's
you do.
Considered it. His you do. Car was a 335 IS. Now, if you've paid attention to the podcast, we are big fans of this car. They are cheap used. That is the 3 Series. Well, if you listen to this podcast, it's actually the 3 Series 2 generations back, if you're
Can't
talking
believe
about
that.
But anyway, but that is the E92 generation of
Was
the 3 Series.
Was it now 3 with a new G20 being introduced? It's 3.
Man, well, it's 2 back from this one.
From this one yeah. now, yes.
No. But anyway, we had the E92,
we're not
we had the
math.
F80, and then we had the G20. So we're 2 back from the one they just talked
okay,
about.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Anyway,
you like cars.
Letters
math,
of the alphabet and math, it's all bad. But anyway, the point is, E92, okay, this was a car that if you watch our review of it from long ago, and John probably saw it, We weren't that fond of it in new price, but man, at 20 grand, it's a compelling M3 alternative that I am in love with. He had one. He loved it. Blue with a brown interior. It was the spec that he wanted. He had it for a few years after he saved up and found the perfect one, and it got totaled.
Yeah. Just, we hate hearing about this, honestly. It's rough. I have not experienced it personally.
No, it'd be terrible, for sure.
I love that this was your aspirational car because it was so curated. You talked about in high school, you were looking at, you know, well, this is this, you know, this car.
Yeah.
It's such a discerning choice for people. Not everybody is into it. You know, it's effortlessly sporty that, you know, a 3-liter six-cylinder engine could keep pace with the 4.6-liter V8 in his Mustang. And, you know, dissecting every element about the car and think, it's better here. It's more there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Why don't people buy more of these cars?
Yeah.
And why did they offer it for such a short time?
Yeah. It was kind of the sweet spot of that generation in many, many ways.
You realize it's also 2011, and we've talked about moment in time cars.
That's a good point, yeah.
Which was also the 1M.
The 1M and the Porsche Boxster Spyder.
Uh-huh.
And the, well, I'm forgetting one. Oh, the 997 GT3 RS40. All 2011.
Yes.
All of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
We keep coming back to this and kind of discovering
what
cars
in 2011.
Right around
Don't
the 2011, 2012 area that is so special.
Very weird.
Huh. All right. Well, moving on to his accident, he totaled the car after a lot of back and forth with the insurance agents or the insurance company. And he loved this car. Sporty, luxury, everything he's needed. And he's thought about, as you said, he's thought about doing another one. But
yeah.
Isn't that stagnation? Isn't that
That's
we're
his
just kind of dead in the water here?
And it took him so long to shop to find the perfect first one that he's realizing, I'm going to be as picky or more the second time, so I should probably just move on to something else.
He's hearing GNR, Sweet Child of Mine. Where do we go now? Where do we go?
That was his quote. He said, just like that, here we go. Yeah.
All right. So what he wants is a decent amount of power, driver involvement, manual preferred, not a must-have. Actually, his IS was a dual clutch.
Yes.
He said, looks that will age well. Get that Civic Type R origami rear end out of here.
Which goes with the next one, which is not Two Boy Racer. I mean, I'm seeing what you want. I mean, the 335 IS is subtle in styling. Mm-hmm. So you want subtle and classy. You definitely want that. You'd prefer rear-wheel drive. You say strongly preferred. I like that as well. And then it's just, you don't want to be in something where you feel like, oh, I settled for this after the IS.
John,
going
to push on your budget.
Oh, of course you are. Budget is 30 grand, which is decent, actually. 30 grand is not bad, because you can find a really nice 335 IS for 30 grand.
Which is, if you go back that direction, if you do another one, get another one. However, I do have a car, and you might be able to guess it if I say this, and that is it's one that I've been recommending in the past few podcasts.
Okay.
But I think it fits even better for John, because it's a new experience, and it fits all of these. He's going to be in Austin, so weather is going to be great, we'll say.
Yeah, not going to be a big issue.
Rear-wheel drive. And it's you talk about the interior and going backwards, say, to a Mustang. And I say backwards just by interior feel.
Sure.
Nobody buys a Mustang because it's got a luxurious interior. That's
well, nobody
buy
buys a Mustang because they looked at a BMW interior and went, the Mustang's much nicer. Even if it's equivalent, they just don't look at the Mustang and be like, that's a much nicer interior.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I can't step backwards. I have to keep moving forward. And what is that moving forward? What is that car that represents? And again, with this one, I'm wrestling with my choices. I'm thinking, do you get the M3? Do you get an E92 M3? Yeah. Do you go backwards to an E46 M3?
I can see it. I don't know that it's right, but I see that, see how you got there. I thought of that too,
You know, I think cars like the Audi A7 is going to be dead to you, John. I do.
Well, he's concerned about steering feel. I mean, he's concerned about where steering feel has gone since that IS, and he's going, I feel like I'm going to have to sacrifice that. That's in here too.
It is. And then I think, well, of all the Japanese manufacturers, what is the 3 Series equivalent from Lexus, the RC350?
Oh, interesting. Okay, sure.
But you've already experienced one of the most brilliant cars, the IS. And everything that it entails. So is the RC going to be a nicer interior, but a step backwards in terms of performance and handling, what you're really looking for?
Yeah, how's the steering feel going to hold up? I agree with that. Yeah,
I'm wrestling with that.
Yeah, I see it.
And I think, okay, ooh, well, now we're in the sweet spot for a 996 Carrera 4S. 32 grand all day long.
Sure. Yeah.
But I want you to have a 997 or later, John. If you're going to go 911, I want you to have a newer car.
Yeah.
So that blows your budget.
All right.
So if we're going to blow your budget, we're going to do it with a
proper
car.
What I like is for 5 minutes, we're talking about cars that are almost in budget. So we're just going to go there. I love that we're embracing it. Go on.
I think, John, you will see, you will agree that this will justify an extra $8,000
on
top of your budget.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Yep.
Jaguar F-Type.
Compelling.
That's a compelling car.
You are into a trend of recommending that car. Recommending it strongly, by the way. Making it a good point.
I will also have you listening. Everybody listening. I choose these car debates without thinking. I don't read them and think, oh, I'm going to choose that car. I choose them because of the compelling stories or interesting things about them. And so we debate that. And then later on, I come back to them.
You kind of shift your headspace now to looking at, okay, so now that we're doing this one, what car would it be?
I get that. Yeah. Then we come back and think, now what would my choices be? Mm-hmm. I don't read them and thinking, oh, I've got your car ready.
Sure.
Maybe that happens.
Most likely not.
I don't think that is as fun to do, as fun to debate. So I come to this and think,
okay.
Chose the debate and think, interesting story. What do you do after your dream BMW? You move to a Jaguar. Classy, elegant, fast. Right. The sound, the noise.
Yeah,
the noise.
They sound great. They sound great. They look great. They're fun to drive, for sure.
Everything on this category, you cannot throw stones and say, well, it doesn't have a nice interior. No, it's got a great interior.
Yeah, I see it.
You can't say, no, it's not going to handle well. They're great.
Yeah, they handle really well, yeah.
Can't say, no, the power's just not there, because wow.
Yeah.
F-Type.
No, it's great. It's just too expensive. That's the only place we could throw stones at your idea because you're right. It checks every other box very well.
2014 convertibles are just over 30.
Yeah.
Like 31, 32 for a convertible. But I want you in a hardtop.
Yeah, sure.
So I had to go 38 to find one.
Okay.
And I found multiple. They were 37, 38, which is pushing. Are you going to feel that in your monthly payment? Well, yes, but I just think it'll be justified by having that car and walking outside and going, oh my gosh.
I will defend you for a minute because the number of you, and thank you to those of you that write in and say, here's the car I got, guys. I would bet you 50% of those emails, I'm not kidding, 50% of those emails come back and go, I told you my budget was this, but I spent, here's the multiple of that. I spent 10 grand more, I spent 15 grand more because you get excited about a car, which is exactly what we want. You get excited about a car and then all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to spend $50 more a month or $100 more. That happens.
Or 200.
So that's the one place that we can defend you, Paul, because you push budgets a lot, but you push budgets by a few thousand dollars. I mean, sometimes you're like 20 grand up. I'm like, come on, man. But a few thousand dollars, that's a negotiation point when you chase a car. You know, it just happens.
It does. And I do it out of, I guess, wanting whoever we're debating for, wanting them to not come away with, well, if I had just gone a little bit further, would I be that much happier?
Yeah, if you've fallen just short and you're in a car that's fine,
like
we haven't really done a good job.
We're perfect and I met all the specs, but I don't want you to come away thinking, well, I got the Lexus RC and it's good.
It's fine.
Good.
Can't
wait till my next car a month in or 10 minutes in.
That's the worst, yeah.
Hey, we found you exactly everything, and then you're just not compelled by it.
I hear you.
So if you spent more money, are you going to – maybe you can't.
There's
an
argument. There's an argument here,
though. I can be pushed into a corner here.
Yeah.
But I submit to you the F-Type for as much
– I like it.
Keep it under 40.
Yeah.
But an F-Type.
Yeah.
Holy
and I,
cow.
And I defend you because of the number of people that write back having blown their own budget. So I'll go with you there. I have four. They're kind of a pair, two one direction and two the other. Okay. The first two I want to talk about, I'm thinking about your usage, which is fun, chuckable, but nice place to be, all of these kind of things, 30 grand to spend. These are sister cars, but they have to be mentioned. The Audi S3, or if you prefer the hatchback, the Golf R.
Okay, yeah.
Of course, Golf R you could get in the manual. The S3, you're not going to get in the manual. Not going to happen. Okay?
Not going to happen.
So that may be the deciding factor right there, but you might like the form factor of the S3 more. But, I mean, they are essentially the same car, same running gear. They're the same.
Yeah, right.
Which suit do you prefer is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I can see that.
But the Golf R you can get in manual, and I think those are compelling. You should at least go drive them.
But then
I went to, you're concerned about steering feel. You want something that's got like a nice, classy, luxury feel, luxury lines, you know, looks very high-end. Does feel like a progression from where you were, which was that subtle but yet classy 335 IS. Okay, two of them. Get yourself a first-gen that's a 987 Cayman. How much can you – look –
I continually love when I don't arrive
when you don't
at Cayman's.
Do Porsche and I do.
Or
yeah.
even just Porsche.
But here's
Cayman's
the thing.
In general. You arrive there.
The base Cayman you could get for probably 20. Okay?
It'll be a
you
little high
find,
miles on it. But
you can
yeah.
find early Cayman S's for under 30 for sure. Okay?
Sure.
It checks every box that BMW did. Every single one. It's not a turbo motor. That's going to have a different feel. But the 987 is going to have the steering feel you want, too. That's the other reason I'm staying at the first gen.
I hear
because
you. Because
you,
you
go toward the – we've actually got a Generations of Cayman piece coming up that we're just about to shoot that's part of season four, and we're very excited. But that 987 Cayman steering is really – that's the sweet spot of Porsche before they went to electric steering.
It is the pinnacle.
So
I agree.
That's really compelling. And in a similar vein, with your friends at BMW, why not get yourself – a Z4 M Coupe.
Mm,
25 to 30 grand all day long. It's a great parts bin car from BMW. Good engine, great manual steering. I mean, non-electric steering, great hydraulic steering feel. It's a greatest hits car. We look at our piece on it. It's a greatest hits
car.
Sure. I think that is a nice – you have told us that you don't need necessarily – you had a coupe before 2+2, but you're not having a commentary here about here's all the space I need.
Mm.
So let's just embrace that. If you're at a time in your life when the two seats are no problem, which it sounds like you are, 987 Cayman or Z4 M Coupe, you get the steering feel you want, you get the classy look, you get the power. I think one of those two is your car.
Mm, I like both of those too. I mean, of course, I'm all about the Cayman.
Nobody's
always.
Surprised, but yes.
That's so funny. I love it when you arrive at that.
But I love
it's either
that,
Miata or Cayman.
But I love that both of those cars are under 30 grand for nice ones. And there
are the Z4 M Coupes truly under 30?
The one that we drove was sold not long after for 25.
It was?
Yes.
I thought it was like a $40,000 car.
No. I mean, I'm sure they're
well,
out.
Well, that's good news.
Sure, I'm sure they're out there at that price for sure.
Which are probably pretty nice ones.
Yeah, but sure. it's a $25,000 to $30,000 car, as is the Cayman. And those are also those cars where if you pull up in that car, nobody's going to think you spent 25 grand. That's not the reason to buy it, but they are in that category.
Hmm. Oh, I like that. All right. Well, John, you've got some shopping to do and some thinking to do. And touching back on your question about, you know, what do we do after we've owned our dream car?
Mm-hmm.
I think you've got to give yourself permission
to
go on to what's next. And
for
I
sure.
say that
for
pointing
sure.
more at me than I am at anybody else, because here I am, not just Porsche lover, Cayman lover. And you've got to give yourself permission to think, you know what? I could fall in love with a completely different brand.
That's good.
And that's okay. I'm giving myself permission to do that. We've got a myriad of questions to jump to here. Thank you guys for writing in the questions. I love hearing what's on your mind. I guess that's what the social media part is for.
Completely.
It's just
completely,
instantly,
yeah.
Hey, what pops
yep,
your mind? We're
yep.
you know, just looking for quick questions, you know, just a quick hit kind of thing. And I like reading these. There's so much going on. All right. So we're jumping in here. I'm scrolling through. Anything that's stuck out to you?
Akim wrote to us on Twitter. Hasn't written in a while, but it's good to hear from you, man. How do you increase steering feel? Can you take any car and increase steering feel? Akim, the short answer is yes.
Yeah, I'd agree.
The long answer is way beyond my ability. But here is what it requires. What it really requires is suspension refinement. Ultimately, you can do minimal things like, okay, I changed the tires and this kind of stuff.
I was going to say tires
minimum. You can start there and that will change things. And it can change things good and bad. There's another question coming up about tires that where that happens. But ultimately, you need somebody that knows suspension geometry to start tweaking. And I've actually heard recently, Chance and I were talking about a guy locally that has a Alpha 4C and he has done some sort of tweak to the suspension and he claims it is the standard tweak that people are doing to make it steer like it should. But again, somebody has to take the time to figure that out. It's not something most people are going to sit in their garage and go, I'm just going to tweak this. It's going to be better. No, you didn't do that.
Mm.
It's going to take work. But ultimately, if you have a good somebody that knows suspension, this is what Lotus has done for cars forever. And I mean, cars they didn't even make.
Sure.
They took a car that was average and went, let's improve the steering. So it's all about suspension and it's all stuff that involves much more math and technology than I can understand, but it is possible.
A crazy turn here from Cortland B. Something off the top of the cars. Are there any good ski resorts or honeymoon-esque spots in Utah? As a matter of fact, there's tons of them.
Yes.
There's many, actually, in Park City. There's, of course, all the high-end hotels here, the Waldorf Astoria, the Four Seasons, mm-hmm. and I'm forgetting a bunch. St.
There
Regis.
There are 7 or 9, I forget the number, ski resorts within an hour of the Salt Lake City Airport.
Yeah, there's a lot of nice ones, but
nuts.
I'm going to suggest the Zermatt Hotel. It's like Little Switzerland. in Midway, actually. A town called Midway.
Bad. Not bad. Also, you can look at Snow Basin. That's one that doesn't get a lot of people going to.
Snow Basin as well.
Nice,
it's kind of
nice.
To
ski. But if you come up to Park City, you've got Deer Valley, which is incredibly high-end and very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
There's a lot of stuff in this area. If you're a skier and you want to come here for that kind of world, it's kind of take your pick. There's a lot of good hotels. That's a good one.
There's also a question from Kyle N. Does the slope of the depreciation curve influence your recommendations for a certain car? For example, if a car holds its value, are we more likely to recommend it versus one that just drops off a cliff? Mm. Kyle, I will say, and I touched on this in the debate, is I think of a car, you know, that might fit the debate, and then I go hunting to see if that car really
it's
is now that cheap or within the price.
$8,000 to $10,000
5 to 10
within distance, within visibility.
I might have to tweak then I keep bumping up the price, you know, in my search. I keep what about 32,000? Nope. What about 35,000? Nope. How about 38? Yes, we've got one. So that's kind of how I'm influenced because I come back to the really wanting that person to have the car because of how enjoyable and how much it fits. But then what can we do to work on the budget? How can we do that?
Yeah, and I tend to gravitate toward used cars that are already on the back half of the depreciation curve. I mean,
we're
going to recommend things all the time that are more so, but I like to – that's how I shop. I find things that are, wow, they've gotten that cheap. I can actually afford that car now. That's kind of how my headspace is, and that carries over into the podcast.
Hmm. Wow. All right. What else on here?
Olin wrote in on Facebook this is a tough one. Back to steering feel again. Engineering and driving feel question. How do you think companies should engineer electric or hybrid vehicles to make them interesting to enthusiast drivers?
This is this roller is, skate question, isn't it?
This is very difficult. This is it's actually not the roller skate design.
It's not.
This is just talking about how do you get an enthusiast car that is an electric or hybrid car. And Olin, I'm going to say to you the biggest thing that is a factor in this so far is weight. They all weigh much more than they should when you look at the stat on paper. You go, why is that car? I mean, I'll give you an example. The Porsche 918. Nobody's saying that car isn't fun to drive, but it also weighs the better part of 4,000 pounds.
Which is astounding.
Why? If you ever stand by one, look, if you stand by a Camaro or a Mustang and somebody says to you this weighs 3,800 pounds, you go, yeah, I can see it. You stand by a 918 and somebody says 3,800 pounds, you go, where is all that weight? It's a tiny car.
You carry your weight well?
Seriously. But it's all about those batteries. This is, with the exception of the GTR, which defies all logic and reason in this area, heavier cars don't perform as well. Or to put it another way, even if they perform well, and the GTR is a poster child for this too, they don't have as much feel. If we're talking about enthusiast feel, something's got to be done about the weight.
Yeah. Oh, Olin goes on to say, he talks about the skateboard down here. You know, what if you had just the flat skateboard base,
sure.
no engine, no drivetrain to deal with? How would we design a fresh take? How would I design a fresh take on an electric car? Olin, I think that most car manufacturers are looking at electric cars, with the exception of a few, the Tesla Roadster, the first one being the grand exception, of this has to do the acceleration and mileage and range first thing, thing first, you know, before any other requirements. I don't know that they're approaching it from a, here's a great platform that handles well, and then let's figure out where to put the batteries and how to balance the weight. Yes, you think the skateboard is always the answer, but then, you know, from a design standpoint, you can plop any three-box, two-box, MPV, minivan shape right on top of that, and then what do you do with that front traditional shape where the engines used to go?
Yeah.
Think about inline eight-cylinder engines on Duesenbergs and Packards of the day. That long hood was dictated by the powertrain.
Good point. Good point.
So you think, okay, what about modern design? Mm-hmm. Why don't we start in with a different thinking instead of starting with the skateboard, even though you want to still get that weight down low?
Yeah.
What if we do package our weight like internal combustion engines are packaged? A mid-engine car, well, all the weight's right there.
Sure.
Why do we have to have, well, it's got to be the flat 4-inch thick, you know, the batteries on the floor, that kind of thing. What if we packaged it and thought of it and approached it just like the handling dynamics of a Cayman or an S2000, the front mid-engine kind of car, and then worked our battery packs around that dynamic?
Yeah.
And then that would dictate the styling because you've got clearances to deal with. You think, okay, how tall can I make that battery pack? We're essentially stacking up the batteries into a shape. versus laying them flat on the floor, and that's how it should always be, and then it doesn't matter what you plop on top of that thing. It's a child's toy. You know what I mean? It's that wooden child's toy with wheels, and you put the top on.
Yeah. Forget what those Faraday are Future was trying to do, too, yeah.
Yeah, everybody comes to the skateboard. That's the best ever. Well, is it?
Interesting.
Is it? Does it give you the perfectly neutral handling? Yes, it defines the flat floor and plenty of cargo space and plenty of boredom.
Well, but here's the thing. There's a the thing that happens is that low, flat weight, okay, and there was a question actually on social media, and I don't have your name in front of me, and I apologize, but somebody asked a question about the Model 3 in relation to the Cayman recently, because they said,
you and I
talk about how these cars that are electric cars right now, they are not dynamic to drive cars, and yet this person has read, and I've seen them too, comparisons of the Model 3 versus the Cayman. First off, I think that person hasn't driven a Cayman recently. That's part of my answer. But the second thing is that what happens is when you drive these electric cars, and the Model 3 is a great example. The Model 3 has in some cases been compared to the Cayman. No, it does not drive as well as the Cayman.
I don't understand why.
Here's why. Here's why. Because the Cayman has lost, and this is my perspective, the Cayman has lost a little bit of its steering feel in the current version. The Model 3 doesn't really have any, but it's lost steering feel. But the Model 3 doesn't feel like a very big car, whereas the Model S feels like a long car. The Model 3 doesn't feel like a big car, but the weight is very low. And so you have an automotive person thinking about what's the last thing I drove where the steering was similar in its turn-in, because it's got good turn-in in
sure,
the Model 3.
Sure, sure.
And the weight felt really low. Didn't feel like it was in front of me. Felt really low. Most people's analog for that is the Cayman.
Okay, I can see that.
I do not think when driving the Model 3, wow, this handles like a Cayman. It handles like a well put together.
I never thought that.
No, it handles like, well, you own one. Handles like a well put together medium sized sedan. It doesn't feel like it has weight coming from any specific direction because all the weight's in the floor. You don't have, most of the time when you drive a sedan like that, you can feel the weight up front.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute you turn the wheels, because most of those sedans that size also are front wheel drive, which is another thing.
True.
Turn the front wheels and you feel those front tires getting murdered and you feel that huge lump of weight in front of you. You take that sensation away and you add rear wheel drive. All of the sensations we're used to in a sedan like that are now gone. What does this feel like? Oh, this feels like a Cayman. It doesn't handle like that. But I can see how you got there in your discussion.
Interesting. I introduce myself when I walk around. I introduce myself as an automotive person. People say, what do you do? I'm an automotive person. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's on my business card. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's how I'd like to introduce myself now.
Automotologist? No, let's stop. No. I really ought to stop.
No. Kirk M. on Facebook asked me which current head of design would I love to work with if I were to go to work for an auto manufacturer.
Mm.
Well, heck, I'd love to head up a few studios. But which head of design, dead or
we've
alive,
we've had that conversation, yeah.
from any decade of auto manufacturing, would I love to work with? Strangely, after finishing with the Corvette shoot recently, it would probably be the beginnings of Corvette styling or GM styling. It'd be Harley Earl.
Okay.
Because of the anything goes nature of that first studio.
Sure.
Whereas now, maybe I could maybe name a few and you know, excellent studios and that kind of thing. But I think of Infiniti. My friend Kareem is heading up Infiniti Design. And it'd have to be somebody that is still searching for a design language or wrong word, but
searching for the new style. Sure.
Reimagining ourselves and coming out of our cocoon of this new, here's us. We're redefining the brand. Infiniti is very much in that position right now.
Yeah,
Hyundai and Kia used to be, but they found it. They've established it.
They've landed
they
on it.
They know where
they're
going.
Yep.
BMW, Porsche, blah, on and on.
Okay.
I mean, they're honestly crazy enough. There've been complaints from designers I should say design students and think, I'd never want to go work for Porsche because it's the same shapes. It's the same stuff all the time. That has changed because of the introduction of the Macan, the Cayenne, the Taycan coming down the road, all that kind of stuff. But I get the point. It's like, why would I just want to draw 911s all day? I would like to draw 911s all day long, but
I look at
Infiniti and things are undefined right now. They're exploring language, and that's why they keep coming out with these prototype cars and gauging public opinion and saying, what about these kinds of shapes and what is this going to be and who are we we're exploring. We've had cars and we've built cars and you can go buy them at a dealer, but that's not where we're headed.
We're finding
what about
something.
This?
Yeah, okay.
And Infiniti comes to the top of my mind for something like that.
I like that. Plus the Harley Earl thing is interesting because that's the era in which design won.
design,
you guys
establish
in the engineering department,
the Corvette.
Yes, you guys in the engineering department, we pay you to be engineers, figure out how to make the car work underneath that shape. There's no discussion about, we need to move the, we're not moving nothing. That's the design,
yep.
You figure it out.
Yep.
That is the exact opposite of what happens now, but you're right,
no
that
kidding.
Era is interesting because it's just like, you make it work, that's the shape.
I mean, Apple does that from a design perspective. They say, we want
to
make
to
it
degree.
Even thinner, and the engineers just really start sweating.
Beat their head against the wall, for sure. Duncan, you asked a question. Can you put too much tire on a car? Yes, you can. He's got a Fiesta ST. He's gone to Indy 500s on it from the Michelin AS3s, and he feels like some of the magic of the car is lost. I think that's interesting that that's the change you made, and you don't like it as much. I find that kind of intriguing. But to answer your question in the larger sense, yes, you can over-tire a car, and then the steering starts to lose feel and get sluggish. It starts to tramline, meaning following lines and seams in the pavement even more. You have grip like crazy, but your feel goes away because everything's just been muffled in this wall of tire. Now, generally, Duncan, that takes a pretty major tire change. You've had a minimal one. I'd love to unpack
Hoosier that. R7s. You're going nowhere.
I'd love to unpack what you feel has been lost, but there's the discussion also that happens with the 86 chassis that there are people that will argue. They will argue for a long time that the minute you put good tires on that car, it becomes less interesting because it's not as slidey. I do not agree with that category because my issue with the car was those bad initial tires on the car, they want to slide, but as much as that's good for the back, nobody talked about the fact that they also understeered like crazy. Until you got the back to come around, it just understeered.
Well, the car came alive at that point.
With good tires on it, the front sticks, and now you can get the back loose. And then also, guess what? You can do grip. But I like grip. So there is that debate as well.
There was a question from Dallas Mills. He's suggesting a Topic Tuesday discussion. I'm wondering, yes, possibly, but I'm wondering if there's just a quick answer to this. He was discussing with his girlfriend about self-driving cars being built to adapt to roads instead of the roads adapted to non-self-driving cars. Well, it's infrastructure. It's because we have so many roads already.
Yeah.
We've always, you know, we've got everything out there, and there's some roads that are just... You know, why was the neighborhood planned like this? Or why was the city center planned like this? It just grew up over time, much like European cities. It just kind of grew over the years and decades and centuries, actually. And
the European city is a great argument.
Really change that.
Yeah.
Rather than a master plan for a city that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There
are
a few of those in Dubai or Saudi Arabia, I think.
Well, how do you do the blank slate on a modern city? And this is the problem with Europeans. European cities is a great example here. You're not going to pick your European iconic city and go, you know what? We're going to destroy all these roads that have been here since the Roman times, and we're going to completely rethink. Nobody's going to go for that.
Are you going to go to any state or federal level and think or propose an idea of, you know what? We should tear that out. We're going to start over.
Yeah.
We're going to do it differently. Are you really the Department of Transportation is going to hear you out?
Yeah.
That's going to be a hard uphill battle.
That's the problem. And so it's adapt to the current infrastructure versus make the infrastructure what it should be for where we're headed. I see the argument.
I do
but
too.
That's the problem.
And I think that is the way with things, how they're progressing. That's ideally the way you want to approach a project like this.
Ideally, yeah.
But how can you possibly...
How do you start over, yeah.
What about, you know, windy country roads out in the middle of nowhere?
You think, all that stuff's going to stay.
Got to map that and... Can't change that.
Yeah, all that stuff's going to stay.
It's an interesting discussion, but we've got to deal with what we've
got. I expect
got.
There will be some city centers in the world where the city center will change. But outside of like the extreme city center, it's going to stay like it is.
If you want a city that is actually being built from the ground up, if you're curious, if you're interested at all, go to neom.com. It's neom.com. It's a project in Saudi Arabia, and it's absolutely fascinating. Watching the videos, watching about the vision and the development and what they're doing, it's astounding. If you want to kind of see, we're going to create a city out of the desert from nothing.
Wow.
Sustainability, food, water, biotech, mobility, entertainment, tourism, sports, the whole thing.
It's an if you build it, they will come thing?
I guess.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
Neom.com. I'm fascinated by these kinds of projects. And, you know, if you want a complete diversion for the rest of your afternoon.
I have to answer a question for Dammit Patton, who's actually joining us. While he's listening to this, he's in process of coming to our meetup. He's asking, he's about to get himself into an R8 Turo rental car to join us for the weekend.
Holy moly.
And he's saying, any last minute advice for somebody that's never driven mid-engine before? I'm going to give you a couple things. First off, you're in an R8.
Wow.
It's going to help you because it's all-wheel drive. So a lot of the normal issues are muted in that car. But the biggest thing I would tell you, plus it's R8, so don't hoon it right out of the gate.
Right.
Just ease yourself in. It is the 6-speed gated manual, by the way,
which is
really cool. The number one thing I will say to you is brake in a straight line. I mean, you're supposed to do this anyway, but brake in a straight line. Do not shift mid-corner.
Yeah. Yep.
This is the place where the engine goes, I'm sorry, what did you say? And comes around to see what's going on.
What's back here?
Exactly.
What's up here?
And I've actually, look, I will admit it. I've had a boneheaded, I was lazy moment and done it in the Lotus.
You lifted?
Came into a corner and I did the shift too late. And as soon as I got that gear slotted, it did exactly what it should do when you're that boneheaded. And the back started coming around. And so I countered. And, you know, got it to be okay, you know, slid my way. It was an accidental drift to the corner. I wasn't drifting because I was super cool. I was drifting because I was super bonehead, and I just happened to catch it and actually survive on the back end of the corner.
Was this with the newer old tires?
Old tires.
Okay. All right.
Fair enough. Old tires, which possibly could have been a factor. But here's the thing. It was one of those things, Patton. The minute I did it, I thought, that's going to go wrong. I was just having a lazy driving moment, and I just slotted the gear and released the clutch just flat out too late.
Yeah.
And went, well, of course, I mean, literally, the back of my mind, I was having a conversation with myself. The back of my mind was going, of course the back end's going to come around when you do that.
Well, yeah, and to your point, have the car settled and either neutral or slight increase of power as you're moving through the corner. You do not want to hop off the gas.
Yeah, don't do that.
In the mid-engine car.
Yeah.
You want to just neutral throttle or just slight power.
None of this is going to happen in your weekend. I fully believe you're just going to enjoy it. It's obviously an all-wheel drive, not a rear-wheel drive. It's a pretty docile mid-engine platform. I hope you thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gay for Cars, which is an interesting IG name, but I'm going to follow along. He said, what car makes you feel like you're going the fastest? He's driven a lot of modern stuff.
Hmm.
And he said, all the modern, and we agree with you, all the modern stuff just insulates you. And you look down and you go, why am I going this fast? Because you don't have the sensations of driving fast anymore. The simple answer here is a convertible. Convertibles still involve you in the wind noise and the everything, and you get a sense of it. But
Mercedes
honestly,
is trying to go the opposite direction and insulate you from everything with the neck brace, neck curtain,
the windows up, the air scarf, or whatever.
It doesn't feel like the top is down.
And by the way, the top is still down.
Convertible. Yeah. Why? Anyway.
Yeah. All of the benefits of being with it closed, and yet your hair got messed up. It's a fantastic thing. We had a whole bunch of meetings about it. It was great.
It's the neck scarf. Sorry, neck scarf.
Exactly. So there's that.
I don't know what that is.
But here's the thing. It's the older stuff that doesn't, I hate to say it, but the older stuff that doesn't have as much insulation or safety is what gives this to you. The best modern car, I know it's cliche, I know you hear me saying it, is the Lotus Elise. It's one of the reasons I love it. But also things like the Caterham and the MX-5 does a good job of this. But that's a convertible. The convertibles are the way to this at this point, because everything else is starting to insulate us so much. You look down and you're going 90. And I say that not because you're hooning. You're going 90 because you look down and went, oh, I'm doing 90, which is not what you want.
Right. All right. Question from Steven S. on Facebook says, use Chevy SS's around 40,000 miles are now $30,000 and change. Why would you buy a regular sedan when you can have a four-door Corvette for less money?
Because you don't know.
We're in agreement, Steven, and I think you're all out of excuses, so send a picture when you get one.
I like that.
Guys, thank you for your questions. We really appreciate it. We are looking forward to next time. Cheers.
Let me tell you about Pete, who loved hockey and always wanted to play in the NHL. Pete played since he was 3 and begged his mom to let him stay on the ice. Why, some nights, he even slept in his hockey skates. Pete practiced and practiced until one day. When he was 47, Pete realized he just wasn't that good. So he threw his skates in the trash. But then he heard how GEICO, proud partner of the NHL, could save him money on car insurance. So he switched and saved a bunch. So it all worked out.
I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. Federal government worker Blake Murray in D.C. says he's pretty much had it with the partial government shutdown.
It's pretty demoralizing, you know, and I feel like kind of a pawn in a political game and totally powerless.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is asking President Trump to postpone his January 29th State of the Union address, citing security concerns. But Republicans say this is just politics, shutdown politics, a move intended to keep President Trump off the national stage. Going to prison for 20 years, a Tennessee teacher who took a 15-year-old student and ran for weeks. Prosecutor Dan Cochran.
We think it's a serious sentence. 20 years is a significant amount of time. He's going to have all that time to think about what he did. the consequences of it. We asked for 30, obviously, but 20 is a very serious sentence, and we feel good about it.
An employee and a customer at an IHOP restaurant in Huntsville, Alabama, were killed in a shooting that also injured another employee. I'm Rita Foley.